Given the limited material means at their disposal, it was a gigantic undertaking. It meant carving out of those tortured goat tracks, zigzagging through the wadis and precipitous hills of Judea, a road that bypassed the Jerusalem highway and lay beyond the control of the Arab Legion. It could not be a trail open only to a daringly driven jeep. A dozen jeeps a night were not going to save the 100,000 Jews of Jerusalem. Welcome to Jerusalem 365, episode 202, The Inspiration and the Grave of Colonel Mickey Marcus. I'm Mayor Soloveitchik. It is one of the striking scenes in Scripture. A Jew that ministers in the halls of power in Persia learns of the crisis experienced by his brethren in Jerusalem and is overcome by concern. The words of Nehemiah, the son of Chachaliah, "And it came to pass in the month Kislev, in the 20th year, as I was in Shushan the palace, that Hanani, one of my brethren, came, he and certain men of Judah. And I asked them concerning the Jews that had escaped, which were left of the captivity, and concerning Jerusalem. And they said unto me, The remnant that are left of the captivity there in the province are in great affliction and reproach. The wall of Jerusalem also is broken down, and the gates thereof are burned with fire. And it came to pass, when I heard these words, that I sat down and wept, and mourned certain days, and fasted, and prayed before the God of heaven." Nehemiah goes on to beseech the king he served to allow him to journey to Jerusalem in order to secure the sacred city and defend his fellow Jews. "And it came to pass in the month Nisan, in the 20th year of Artaxerxes the king, that wine was before him, and I took up the wine and gave it unto the king. Now I had not been before time sad in his presence. Wherefore the king said unto me, Why is thy countenance sad, seeing thou art not sick? This is nothing else but sorrow of heart. Then I was very sore afraid, and said unto the king, Let the king live forever. Why should not my countenance be sad, when the city, the place of my father's sepulchres, lieth waste, and the gates thereof are consumed with fire? Then the king said unto me, For what dost thou make request? So I prayed to the God of heaven, and I said to the king, If it please the king, and if thy servant have found favor in thy sight, that thou wouldst send me unto Judah, unto the city of my father's sepulchres, that I may build it." A Jew living in the lap of luxury is saddened unto his soul, knowing that far away, Jerusalem is in need and Jews are in danger. Thousands of years later, another Jew who walked in the halls of power, who had served in a position of leadership in one of the most powerful armies in the history of the world, would journey for thousands of miles to help his brethren and to oversee the saving of Jerusalem. Having captured the old city, the Jordanian legion focused on the battle for the new city, shelling the Jewish neighborhoods from high points such as the Mount of Olives. Meanwhile, Jerusalem was starving, having received its last shipment in Operation Nachshon many weeks before, prior to Passover. The siege also meant that badly needed materiel and weaponry could not get in to the Jewish troops that desperately needed them. The Book of Jerusalem informs us that, quote, "Jerusalem's casualty toll mounted until at the end, it would represent on a proportional basis 5 times the toll suffered by London in the worst year of the Blitz," end quote. And the book goes on to describe the ends that Jewish Jerusalemites went to in order to find some meager, terribly meager form of sustenance during the siege. Quote, "A common dish was crushed matzah, sprinkled with oil, spread on more matzah, and called monkey fat. Ruth Ehrlich grew radishes on her windowsill, watering them with the last of her water ration after it had been passed through its 4 traditional stages. Mrs. Joseph Rivlin, a distinguished hostess, offered her occasional callers a cup of water passed through her ancient samovar, hoping that somehow the memory of the gallons of tea it had boiled over the years would leave an imprint upon it. Because the shelling made food distribution difficult, the meager bread ration was often stale. Mothers with babies had to soften it with water so that their children could eat it. The city was filled with sick infants for whom the hospitals, overflowing with wounded, had no room," end quote. Meanwhile, among the Jewish leaders desperate to save Jerusalem was a man by the name of David Mickey Marcus. I recently had occasion to ponder his legacy again when, in the middle of Passover, my family took a trip to West Point and we were given a tour of the grounds, including the cemetery. As part of the tour, the guide took us to the grave of one of the alumni of the school, Mickey Marcus. I had heard of the man before, of course, but I did not know that he had been buried there. This was a man who had left a position of power in order to help lead the first Jewish army in so many centuries. Again, I cite from O Jerusalem, quote, "He was a graduate of West Point, a veteran of the Normandy landing, the holder of numerous British and American decorations, end quote. As the book goes on to describe, Marcus had come to Jerusalem thanks to Ben-Gurion's understanding that he needed to seek military talent from outside the land of Israel, those that had led within the setting of a major modern army. Quote, among the distinguished officers prepared to offer their services to the new state had been Brigadier General Walter Bedell Smith, Eisenhower's chief of staff in Europe during World War II. A formal veto of the plan by the Defense Department, however, had prevented their departure. Only Colonel Marcus, determined to aid his Jewish brothers, had defied the ban, walking away from a prestigious post in the Pentagon. End quote. One of Ben-Gurion's central concerns throughout the war for independence was ensuring that Jerusalem would be part of the Jewish state. This meant that the siege had to be broken. But, as we have mentioned, the road to Jerusalem, Bab el-Wad, was essentially impossible to traverse. Originally, the strategy attempted was to capture a high point on the way to Jerusalem, Latrun, in order to clear Bab el-Wad for convoys. That attempt failed. Breaking the siege of Jerusalem was a primary responsibility of Marcus, because, as O Jerusalem describes, he had been given, quote, an order naming him commander-in-chief of the Jerusalem front, responsible for all the men from the city to Latrun. The same order made Marcus the first general of a Jewish army since the Maccabean revolt, assigning him the newly created rank of Aluf. End quote. The book goes on to describe how Marcus, along with two other men, Vivian Herzog and Amos Chorev, discovering a narrow shepherd's passage near Latrun, pondering a solution to the fact that traveling Bab el-Wad was impossible, create a different path to Jerusalem. Quote, exhausted, they could see in the moonlight 2.5 miles away the verdant promontory against which they had unsuccessfully thrown their forces the night before. Below the little clearing around the monastery of Latrun, they could make out in the moonlight the road to Jerusalem, skirting the foot of the Trappist estates up to Bab el-Wad. The punishing passage along which they had just pushed their jeep paralleled that road. After running through the abandoned Arab hamlet of Beit Susin, it started through the wadis and steep mountain slopes leading up to the Judean Heights. A passage for shepherds since biblical times, it ran through the wild mustard, thyme, and cyclamen without any discernible pattern. Gasping for breath, Amos Chorev looked at the dark mounds of the mountain still before them. If only we could find a way through there, he sighed. We'd have another way of getting to Jerusalem. You think it could be done? Herzog wondered. Marcus snorted. Why not? He said. We got across the Red Sea, didn't we? End quote. The book goes on to describe how this idea was brought to Ben-Gurion, who responded by telling them that a passage was not enough and that a real road had to be built. This became one of the major tasks of Marcus and his men. That an American Jew would reference the crossing of the sea is striking, because one of the fascinating stories highlighting the connection between America and biblical Israel is the fact that Benjamin Franklin suggested the splitting of the sea as the image that should comprise the seal of the nascent United States. Meanwhile, it was Jefferson, according to Adams's recollection, who had suggested another image, and here I paraphrase Adams's letter, that of Israel in the wilderness, following a cloud by day and a pillar of fire by night. Jefferson had suggested the courage of biblical Israel in continuing the journey as the seal of the country that had just been founded. Here, an American Jew seeking to save Jerusalem referenced the crossing of the sea and suddenly would play a major role in the forging ahead of the Jewish journey to Jerusalem. O Jerusalem describes the meeting that took place in the Holy Land between two Jews from very different parts of the world who had come together to plan the salvation of the Jewish troops in Jerusalem led by David Shealtiel. Quote, in the headquarters of the Haganah, a Russian, Joseph Avidar, and an American, David Marcus, presided over a tense meeting. Under their supervision, the people who had walked through the Red Sea and crossed the deserts of the Exodus were about to embark on an extraordinary engineering adventure. As David Ben-Gurion had promised Shealtiel's intelligence officer, they were going to try to achieve with sweat, ingenuity, and mechanical skill what they had failed to accomplish with arms, opening a road to Jerusalem. Given the limited material means at their disposal, it was a gigantic undertaking. It meant carving out of those tortured goat tracks, zigzagging through the wadis and precipitous hills of Judea, a road that bypassed the Jerusalem highway and lay beyond the control of the Arab Legion. It could not be a trail open only to a daringly driven jeep. A dozen jeeps a night were not going to save the 100,000 Jews of Jerusalem. It had to be a road that could take fully loaded trucks, it had to be built quickly, and it had to be built under the constant menace of Arab shellfire from Latrun. End quote. This road, named the Burma Road, after another in Asia, would save Jewish Jerusalem, ensuring that at least the new city would be part of the newborn Jewish state. Tragically, as O Jerusalem describes, Aluf Marcus would not live to see the fruit of his labors killed in a friendly fire incident. That, of course, obligates us even more to remember him. At West Point, our guide told us that many visitors to the graves of West Point had taken on the Jewish tradition of placing stones from the ground on top of the gravestones themselves. The reason for this Jewish tradition is a bit unclear, but it is perhaps linked to the fact that the Hebrew word in traditional parlance for gravestone, matseva, is also the word used by the Bible to describe the stone set up by the patriarch Jacob as a marker at the site where he had had his dream. Jacob is himself called the Evan Yisrael, the foundation stone of the family of Israel. To place a stone upon a gravestone is to see the person buried there as a foundation and inspiration for the way in which we live. It is to proclaim that we are inspired by that person's life. David Marcus is one of the great embodiments of Jewish covenantal responsibility and sacrifice in Jewish history. And Jerusalem and the Jewish world is in his debt. This is Meir Soloveitchik, looking forward to learning together tomorrow. Signing off.